Rebag is a luxury resale marketplace. They have a curated collection of investment-worthy bags, watches, and fine jewelry. Each piece is carefully vetted and verified by experts. You can buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Hermès, Chanel, and Cartier. Head to Rebag.com to get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10. That's Rebag.com to get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10.
Betches Media presents...
I would like to speak to America's men for 1 minute.
That slacker barista.
I start getting full of emotion.
Now we're going to build this new bridge here.
Can I provide a definition?
Mm-hmm.
No, I can't.
Betches Up Podcast.
Like, how are people surviving?
Hello, I'm Amanda Duberman.
I'm Caitlin Bird.
And this is the Betches Up Podcast, where C-SPAN meets the group chat to help you process and laugh at the biggest topics in U.S. news and politics. Now, Caitlin, I'm fairly certain I already know the answer to my icebreaker question today, but I'm still going to ask. If you could invite the FBI over to help you find a lost item in your home, what would it be?
Man, I like to think I'm actually pretty organized, but it might be the classified documents, I guess.
I thought you were going to say in their house. I would never let them in.
Well, there's that too.
Thank you for yes-anding with me, Caitlin.
No cops in the house is a great foundational principle.
truly, like, we have a friend, I adore her, and she works for the FBI, and if she, like, comes over or something, Mike's like, put the weed away, like, don't vape around her, like, I don't know if it puts her in a weird position, and I'm like, okay.
Well, not anymore, it's legal
in
New
York,
what is she gonna
do? It was before that.
No,
and she was at our
wedding,
and my wedding, like, out on the deck was just various blunt circles, so the jig is up.
I actually, my partner grew up with somebody who went on to be a cop, and hilariously, literally everyone from my partner to this guy's brother to the entire friend circle are all weed smokers. So it was just this kind of quiet, like as he was going through the academy, everyone was like, just quietly like walking away.
Yeah. I'm not going to say anything if you're not.
Yeah,
that's tobacco. I love smoking tobacco.
Yeah, no, obviously. I got my partner a lighter a few years ago, a custom one, just for smoking tobacco. Yep.
Mm-hmm. Precisely. That's definitely what you need. Yeah, I think I have like a lot of like single earrings that I still have held out. Like I've since moved and I'm like, no, I'll find that other earring for sure. So I would assign them to an earring that might have a classified etching, so they simply must find it. I was telling my husband last night that one time, this is not related to the subject matter at all, it's just related to this story. One time, long before I met Michael, I hooked up with a guy at his house, and then like he didn't text me. Like I knew I had left my necklace at his house. Like it wasn't a nice necklace. It was probably like $60, which like in your early 20s is like, that's a lot of money. Like I bought myself a nice necklace. And so he never texted me. And so like to kind of get his attention again, I was like, I didn't really care about the necklace that much, but I was like, hey, I think I left the necklace. And he was like, you didn't. I looked everywhere. And then I just kept doubling down because I was like, I did. That's where it is. I did not lose this necklace. It is at your house. Never heard from him. Caitlin, 3 years later, This man sends me a Facebook message and says, so I just moved. And when we were moving things around, I got behind my radiator and I did find your necklace. And it was like the most redemptive feeling ever. Because I could tell at the time, he definitely thought I was just like trying to find a reason to talk to him.
Okay, it's not that serious. Okay, no one is going to go through that much effort to like make up a necklace just
truly,
so they can talk to you again.
Truly.
Okay,
but that's,
like,
yeah.
Men will like imagine that necklaces are an entryway to a lifelong obsession instead of going to therapy.
Precisely. But perhaps I would have sent the FBI to retrieve my necklace from there. And this question is, of course, in reference to the fact that Mike Pence is the latest former executive staff member to have accidentally or on purpose taken classified documents from the White House, evidently feeling a pang of FOMO. So Pence had a lawyer search his home in Indiana last week and found around a dozen documents marked as classified. Sometimes I wonder if Amy Coney Barrett might be his only lawyer friend, but regardless, In turning those documents over to the government, the lawyer said the materials were, quote, inadvertently boxed and transported to Pence's home, and that the former vice president had no idea that they existed. The lawyer stated that as soon as Pence was made aware of the documents, they were locked away in a safe space. I just naturally said that, a safe place, as they waited for proper direction on handling. So basically, they're like, we did everything we absolutely could have. Here's the play-by-play. We are not Trump. The FBI then went to Pence's house in Indiana to remove the documents, and the DOJ and FBI are now reviewing them. So as we've said a million times, you know, the key distinction between Trump and Biden, and now perhaps Mike Pence, is that they're not hoarding the documents. They identify themselves and then turn them over. But I don't know. I'm probably not the only one among our listeners. I've been made a little uneasy by like how many dudes just keep accidentally bringing home information that might have our nation's secrets. But I'm curious, like, is it that deep, or is it just like so common and not that dangerous?
It's so common. I really feel like the most instructive thing about this is to go back to, it's really hard to do. It's really hard to look directly at it. You kind of have to look at it out of the corner of your eye, but like the email scandal is almost beat for beat the same thing.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter if it's electronic or if it's paper documents, the chances that your inbox is going to have something when you were Secretary of State or a high government official that was classified is very, 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 very high. And the truth is that like it's gonna have like the paper. Think about how many papers you probably have in your house that are completely irrelevant but were really important at the time, and you just don't know where they are. Like you haven't kept track of them. Mm-hmm. If you're not thinking about it, the fact that people are finding them is actually almost more comforting, because it suggests that they really don't pay attention to how much shit they have in their house, which is fine. From like a me perspective as a citizen, it's like, oh, you're just like me. You can't figure out where your shit is.
It really is quite relatable.
It's the most relatable thing that's happened in government
Mike
service
has ever done.
Yeah, but yes, for sure. Other than, I mean, it can't get less relatable than a man who calls his wife mother.
Yeah.
Now, like, literal motherfucker. Anyway, moving on. The point is that like
it's Pence Day.
We also overclassify things at a tremendous pace. Like there's a lot of stuff that's put on top of stuff where they're just like, well, we'd rather say like this is secret than not, because then it will be treated differently. So like there'll be like briefing notes from like 2013 that are like UK being fucked with by Russia, and you'll be like, wow. Super secret, you guys. Like, this is not a secret thing. Like, we've lived through the consequences of the actual intel at this point. Like, you know, it's going to be labeled classified. I'm not worried about Pence. First of all, not because I think he's a good person, but because I think he's legitimately too cowardly and or inept to successfully sell state secrets. So I'm not worried about him.
Mm-hmm.
Trump is a different matter. Mm-hmm. We knew it while he was present in office that he was literally leveraging the office for his own corruption.
Yeah, I'd like you to do me a favor, though. Iconic.
Yeah. So he's been doing this for a long time with information that's secret, which means that it's probably continued after he left office. The chances that Joe Biden, who was like Barack Obama's like, hey, I have millions of dollars. Let me do this instead of you having to put an extra mortgage on your house to pay for your child's cancer treatment. Is selling state secrets is really low. Like, I just feel like it's not likely that he was doing that. Feel like it would show up somewhere somehow into the rest of his 40 plus
what a
year
plot twist that would be
career. No, but like that would be like some like next level shit. Like he did all of this,
he's been
and
a Russian asset the whole time.
Manchurian candidate going back to 1970 something. Like what the fuck.
Yeah, I look forward to the headline at some point this week. Bill Clinton discovers documents in upstate New York home. All right. right. So now I want to talk about some Senate elections, and not the ones we had just about 3 months ago, but the ones we'll have just short of 2 years from now. So one of the most anticipated races is already in Arizona, where progressive House member Ruben Gallego has announced his intention to run against newly self-identified independent Kyrsten Sinema. His campaign said they raised $1 million in the day after the announcement from 27,000 donors. I think the Davos Kyrsten Sinema filibuster high five was probably quite a motivator. And Gallego says that breaks a record previously held by Mark Kelly. So there's lots to unpack here. It's not a typical primary challenge because Kyrsten Sinema has announced that she's going to be an independent. So assuming that she runs, that would mean she doesn't run against Gallego in a primary. Instead, she would run against the Democratic candidate, presumably him, and a Republican candidate in a three-way general election. I'm sure like my stomach drops when I hear that. So first of all, before we talk about if that would be terrifying or terrible strategy for Democrats, do you think she's going to run again?
Do I think she's going to run again? She's underwater with like from a pure politics, no actual like substance standpoint. It looks bad. Like I wouldn't do it because she's underwater with literally every voting group everywhere. She's deeply hated by people whose votes she really needs. And she's basically ambivalent or not the best version of the option for people who would, in theory, switch sides to vote for her.
Yeah, so many qualifiers.
So basically nobody likes her.
Yeah. Yeah, because if this happens, she's going to lose too. So she might as well spare herself.
There's a guarantee that she loses. It's a
and loses the state for Democrats.
She loses. Well, I mean, not loses the state. She will, no matter what happens, straight up lose that seat.
Yeah.
There's really not a question. The only question is about whether or not she leaves before and decides not to run. So she does avoids the entire process. Or if she goes and she runs, and then the question is, what's the split on that vote going to look like? And where is she going to heavily campaign? You know, like, is she going to try to convince more of the Republicans to vote for her? Or is she going to really aim to kind of eat away at Democrats? At which point, then we're in a, then, you know, that's messy. It's messy, and the party looks silly for letting her jerk them around like this.
Yeah, and as you were talking, it's like, what if Blake Masters runs and wins the nomination again? then like, I feel like that's when Gallego has a chance. But yeah, obviously this is tricky, and Gallego has admitted that he potentially, his candidacy could put Democrats in a sticky situation. I'm not sure if he was referring to like the vote itself, but more that, you know, a lot of Democrats in the Senate have been asked about this. Like, are you going to support him? Since, you know, Senator Sinema says she's not a Democrat anymore, and they have to work for her for 2 years. I mean, she caucuses with them. So Chuck Schumer has just sort of been like, you know, we're just getting work done. And then on the other side, Mitch McConnell and other Republican senators are loving this. They're like, I can't believe they would betray Sinema, who has really kept the Senate and its fundamental institutions together. Because yes, the filibuster was a founding principle. So yeah, I mean, he made this announcement, and now he's really being asked if this was a good idea and why he did it.
Well, I mean, first of all, we knew that he was going to run. The question was whether or not he was going to do so in a primary, and she kind of cleared the way for that. Another thing is that he wants to build, unlike the Katie Porter announcement, which, you know, going back, the chances are that, you know, he needs to build momentum and get started sooner. I'm assuming that anything he does in the very barely GOP-controlled house, chaos monster that it is going to be a great opportunity for him to campaign and demonstrate what he would do, you know, in the House minority. You know, he's like, make me part of the Senate majority and I can do more. Democrats have a Senate majority, so he can demonstrate like what it would mean to have someone more progressive in that seat, which is a big deal. So there's a lot to be done for his side on this. Democrats really should continue doing what they're doing, which is not talking about it, which is like, I don't know, it's like a year and a half plus off. Like, why are we doing it's almost 2 years from now. Like, let's focus on the American people right now. That's what we're focused on.
You're right. Not only is it not, not only is it not useful to talk about it, it's like the voters don't really want to hear about the horse race right now. It gives the impression that we don't want to give them, which is that all, that's all we're focused on.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a combination of things. It's good for Gallego that he started so soon on for his purposes. It's fine for Democrats not to talk about it. It's like, we started the session of Congress. Like, are you serious? Like, it's been 2 weeks. Like, let's focus on getting work done. I don't know if you noticed, the GOP House is threatening to destroy our economy. So we're kind of focused on that. We're kind of focused on work. And that way everyone can walk away from this more or less clean until you get to a point where, you know, things start getting thorny or there's a filibuster argument, at which point it's going to highlight those differences between parts of the party.
Yeah. In terms of the 2024 map overall, let's this is another bright light that maybe we should look directly at, maybe now, and then we don't have to talk about it. But, you know, this is embarrassing that I hadn't really taken a super close look at this map until today. I had heard people say it was tough. It's tough. It looks tough. Not just because, I mean, Democrats definitely can win a lot of these seats, but Democrats and independents are defending 23 seats and Republicans are only defending 11. And we're looking at this map and the 11 we're talking about are, you know, Utah, Wyoming, North Dakota, Nebraska, Texas, Missouri. You know, I don't want to get my heart broken again, but I know people are really going to fight there. Indiana, Tennessee, Mississippi, and Florida. Those, you know, I feel like they can defend those. Care to disagree?
Nah, there's pretty much no chance for a Democratic gain unless, like...
Oh, I forgot to say Florida, but same, yeah.
Yeah, it would have to be... And here's the thing, like, you don't want to say anything in politics is guaranteed because Donald Trump was president of the United States, much to my chagrin. The point is that, like, it would require, like, an exogenous event, something just out of left field for that map to shift in a Democratic direction. Now, that doesn't mean that it's impossible. For example, if there are federal indictments against multiple Republican candidates, for example, Donald Trump gets indicted at any level, has to go to trial, has to speak under oath, any of these things that could blow this wide open and implicate many people who has spent a lot of time supporting him. It could damage the Republican Party and create a giant rift. There's plenty of things that
You could have a Doug, you know, who did Doug Jones win against in Alabama? Like, there's been a couple of those where, you know,
Roy Moore.
You could get one of those.
I mean, there's a chance that you get, like, really, really out-of-pocket people. There's a chance that the Republican Party implodes.
There's a chance?
I mean, let's see what happens with the GOP House and the debt limit. Like, there are so many things that could happen between now and then that you don't want to say, like, nothing that could stop this. But Democrats are on their back foot. They do have to play defense. The good news is that it is a presidential year, so you're likely to get massive turnout. And that should help the people a little bit further down. And of course, if there is something that damages the Republican brand between now and 2024, it gives a much better chance that perhaps Republican voters sit it out, stay home, feel demoralized, or just aren't as excited as Democratic and independent voters.
Yeah. I mean, when I was thinking about this morning, I totally spaced on that part. And some of the states that were worrying me about that Democrats have to keep their seats in are Arizona, Ohio, Pennsylvania, West Virginia, even potentially Virginia, they just marked as a toss-up, New Jersey. But with the context that people are also voting for president, I feel a little bit more confident about some of those.
Yeah.
New Mexico.
It's going to come down to who's at the top of the ticket and who's at the top of the ticket on both sides. The question is, like, is Biden strong enough to have coattails? Is Biden running? We still don't have an answer to that. I personally have feelings about it, but I don't feel like this is necessary for him. The point is that there's, like, so many things that could happen. I think that the most important thing, if you are a Democratic voter who's like, oh no, the Senate, good. Get organized now. Start getting connected with organizations. Start thinking about policy issues that are really affecting communities and start highlighting those things for people who are not super engaged in politics. So that way they're aware going into the cycle. So when they hear about it, they've got context and they're not just absorbing whatever is sitting in the news. They've been like, oh, my political friend has explained this. This is not what it sounds like. I actually think I've got better idea. Oh, this person doesn't support abortion rights. Like, it's been super bad. Like, I actually think this is really important.
Yeah. Yeah. And we were talking to Annie Wu Henry yesterday about this, and she was saying, we were saying, you know, what Republicans are pretty good at is being very consistent, even on off years, about constantly messaging about to their diehard supporters about what the opposing party wants to do. And we just sort of assume people know that, like, they're looking, they're paying attention, but like, people are busy. Like, every time something sort of happens, like with the debt limit or something, you know, people will. We'll have followers that ask questions that, and I don't mean this in a bad way, they're very basic questions. And it's just, you take for granted how complicated our government actually is and how many people haven't encountered, it's like, you know, what the debt limit is, what actually happened. So to continue to sort of like, and we're actually being truthful about it, where the stories they tell, the hysteria that they spread around is like, you know, black history is queer history and or black history is too gay.
There's just like an enormous amount of conspiratorial thinking. I'm going to get a bit of a history nerd for a moment, but this is actually very similar. And this is not to scare anybody, but this is a very similar atmosphere as there was, you know what I'm going to say, in the years running up to the Civil War. Going back as far as the 1830s, there was like a real interest in like suppressing abolitionist sentiment, and also the truth was not a defense. They're basically like, you can't say anything about slavery that's anti-slavery. You can't say anything about it at all, even if it's true, because it could lead to basically a slave uprising. Mm-hmm. And so they were like, you can't say anything about it. And similarly, you're getting this kind of hysteria about you know, all of these moral issues, these social issues, the culture war. It is a war. They are trying to win it. You know, all of this stuff is designed to like excite your emotional center and prevent you from stopping and thinking about the actual consequences of things. So you should be like cooling that down and making sure that you're engaging with people on just basic shit about their government is like really important. The amount of times people have asked me to explain the Electoral College, these are people who've had multiple cycles of presidential voting, and they were asking me basic questions about like, how does the government work? That's super reasonable, but at the same time, upping your engagement with people, if you're a political knowledge kind of person, is really important. And making sure that if you're not super engaged, and please don't feel like you have to be, but like, cut some time out. Like I like Sunday mornings. I always loved like political shows when I was growing up. That was always what Sunday morning was. When you're at brunch, maybe pick up like a little reading list of stuff to remember about government, just so way you're, it's kind of part of the routine. It's like exercise, you guys. You got to do it on a regular basis in order to get
And the more you do it, like, you will lose muscle memory. Like, sometimes I forget things and I have to look up, but I can familiarize myself immediately versus before I knew as much and had to like, just like, before really internalizing it and looking it up every time. Like, I love, there's tons of books. We'll definitely, we probably got to do a book roundup authored by Caitlin sometime soon to achieve exactly that, so that you can do your, I love Sundays too. Like, I love just like bookmarking long reads all week, and then I'll read them on Sunday, and it feels like such a treat.
Yeah. So again, just do that, but also like, don't let the hysteria get to you, because overwhelmingly it's designed to pull you away from like what actually matters. And like, that's very deliberate. And not letting yourself get exhausted and remembering this is just part of life. The same way, like, you have to remember shit for your taxes. Like, just make sure to save those pay stubs, right? Make sure
it's part of your adults. Exactly. It's part of adulting.
It is part of adulting. But, you know, also like, give yourself like treats like sup, like manicure.
Exactly.
Makes adulting easier.
You have to. Get a fun drink. Do what you got to do. That is our show. Until the end of democracy, I'm Amanda Duberman.
I'm Caitlin Bird.
And this is the Betches Up Podcast. The Betches Up Podcast is produced by Amanda Duberman, Sean Kilby, Jorge Morales Pico, and Rebecca Sousmacat. Editing by Rebecca Sousmacat. Social media by Amanda Duberman and Bridget Swartz. Be sure to follow at Betches_Sup on Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok. And send us your emails at suppod@betches.com. Betches.